Nathan slept until noon the next day, with only vague recollections of having been given doses of whiskey during the night. He was able to join Kingfisher at the supper table.
Yeah, I was pretty used up when we rode in, but I don't recall seeing any cattle. If it's any of my business, how do you survive?
It's not any of your business, but it's no secret either. I reckon it's hard to believe, but everybody in Texas don't raise cattle. Me, I like fine horses, and they don't cause you half the grief of a bunch of cows. Three or four times a year, I'll hire riders, and then we ride across the river into Old Mexico and return with a herd of broomtails. They make damn fine cow horses, and since the Army has finally decided Texans don't aim to rebuild the Confederacy, the forts right here in Texas will buy all I can deliver. I sell some to the Rangers, too.
Well, I'm partial to horses myself, but wasn't there some kind of deal made between the United States and Mexico after the war about respecting one another's borders?
I seem to recall something along those lines, but that deal was struck between Yankee politicians in Washington and Mexicano brass in Mexico City. The average peon don't care a damn what goes on in Mexico City, just like it don't bother me what the politicians are doing in Washington. Across the river, I can hire Mex vaqueros for $1 a day, and they know where the horse herds are. Of course, we have to dodge the Mex Border Patrol, but they're spread almighty thin. Mexico's got one hell of a border.
I've always wanted to be part of a wild horse hunt. I don't know how much help I'd be, but I don't expect to be paid.
Just before or during the foaling season is the worst possible time, and that kills February, March, and April. I'm planning another hunt during the first 2 or 3 weeks in May. You're welcome to ride along.
I like that, but that's 3.5 months away. How do I earn my keep here until then?
You're not expected to. That's one of the benefits of selling horses instead of cows. You work maybe 3 months out of the year, and the rest of the time you're free to ride into town, play cards, and raise hell. On Friday, I generally ride into Uvalde or San Antonio and buy into an all-night poker game. You play poker?
No. Oh. Among other things, I've been a house dealer off and on for maybe 7 years. I can make a living dealing an honest game.
Well, by God, an hombre after my own heart. If you're up to it, we'll ride next Friday and have us a couple of days of town living.
I'll be ready well before then.
I'll breathe a mite easier, having somebody to watch my back. There are folks in these parts that have gunned me down just because they consider me a friend of Ben Thompson and they hate his guts. Then there's some who hate my guts.
Well, I can't say I blame you for riding in. It'd be a shame for you to disappoint all those people.
Stone, if I'm any judge, I'm plumb gonna enjoy your stay at Pendencia Ranch. You don't have a troublesome, snot-nosed little brother that can't hold his whiskey drifting around, do you?
No, thank God.
Next Friday, then. We'll hit San Antone like twin bolts of lightning.
San Antonio, Texas, January 23rd, 1874. Nathan and Fisher rode out just before noon, bound for town. Cotton Blossom had made himself at home at the ranch and had become friendly enough with Milagros that he was willing to remain with her while Nathan was in town.
Now, I like your ranch, but how do you protect it when you're away?
I have friends across the river, and for several reasons, they don't want anything to happen to me or the ranch. There's Milagros, and they respect her. Then there's the cold, hard cash 2 or 3 times a year when I hire Mexican riders. Besides that, I buy fruits and vegetables from poor farmers. When I need beef, I buy from some of the vaqueros who ride with me hunting wild horses.
With free range and mavericks, you could rope your own beef.
I could, but then who would protect the Pendencia when I'm away?
Last time I was in San Antone, Roy Bean was living there, hauling freight from Corpus Christi.
They finally evicted him for not paying his rent. Well, the old buzzard beat him. He was there nearly 2 years, most of it rent free.
I haven't been here in a while, so I'll follow your lead.
I generally hang out at the Alamo Saloon. They're open all night on Friday and Saturday, and the Cattleman's Hotel is just across the street. I keep a running tab at both places. Sometimes when I'm between horse hunts, I'm financially embarrassed.
I have some money if you're up against it. I got lucky on a horse race at 20-1 odds not long ago.
God almighty, with luck like that, maybe I'll just follow you around and place my bets behind you. You follow the races?
Well, I don't go out of my way, but if there's one close by, I won't pass it up.
There's one in Uvalde every July 4th. Why don't you stick around for that? We had some Mex riders last year, and one of them took home some money.
That was some hell of a war. I reckon you South Texans and the Mexicans would still be shooting at one another across the river.
Can't. We're too busy. They got varmints of their own country that need a dose of lead, just like we got some here in South Texas that's needful of the same treatment. Some Sunday we'll ride across the border for a Mexicano rooster pull.
What in thunder is that?
They bury a bunch of roosters in the sand up to their necks, A rider kicks his horse into a fast gallop and, leaning from the saddle, tries to snatch a rooster's head off.
I heard of games like that among the Indians, but they generally try to pick up an arrow from the ground. Why do Mexicans use roosters?
Hell, I don't know. Why do they hot up their grub with enough pepper to melt an iron skillet?
Thompson told me he once had a mess of tamales in Reynosa and had to spend the next 3 days sitting in the creek.
Get Ben drunk and he'll eat an armadillo. A man that ain't satisfied with steak ought to be run out of Texas and made to live in Cajun country where they eat crabs and alligator tails and the like.
Yeah, getting back to the horse races, have you ever considered keeping a few of your captured horses and racing them?
Yeah, but usually I have buyers for all I can catch. But there is one horse out there that I'd like to keep for breeding and racing if I could catch him. He's a black we've named the Son of Satan, because he'll stomp the life out of you if he can. For any man who brings him to me, I have a standing offer of $1,000.
The hell with the money. How can a man put a price on the experience of capturing a horse such as that?
You're right. But if it ever became a matter of money, I'd sell the ranch to own him.
The Alamo was the most imposing saloon in San Antonio, with 2 full-length bars and 6 barkeeps. Nathan and Fisher bought into a game of 5-card stud. Bets were $5. Nathan and Fisher each lost $60 before their luck changed, and when it did, they began getting angry looks from the other 4 men. With each pot worth $120, King Fisher won 3 in a row, while Nathan took the next 2. The diamonds kept coming, and Nathan couldn't believe his eyes. All he needed was a queen, and it came on the last draw. He showed his hand and turned his hole card, the Jack of Diamonds. He had drawn a queen-high straight flush.
I'm out. I ain't never seen luck such as that.
Me neither. I ain't playing again him.
I'm wondering if it's all luck.
It wasn't my deal. You're welcome to look at the cards.
Hell no, they ain't. I've played with this bunch before. They'll take your money all night, but if you win some of theirs, they're ready to holler cheap.
Fisher's eyes dared any man to so much as move. Nobody did.
Take a hand, gents. I'm not going anywhere. You have a chance to win your money back.
The 2 disgruntled men who'd withdrawn again took their seats. It was King Fisher's turn to deal, and he and Nathan quickly lost $20 of their winnings. When it came Nathan's turn to deal, he and Fisher each lost another pot.
Yeah, time to fold them. I won't have another decent hand all night.
They withdrew from the game and went to the bar for a beer.
I never seen a man draw a queen high straight in 5-card stud.
The odds were with me. And that's what I like about 5-card stud. In a 6-man game, by the time you come to the last draw, you have more than half the deck in play, all but 6 cards face up. The other 3 queens were on the table, and my chance of drawing the diamond lady was 1 in 20. It's a game of numbers, my friend.
I believe you. You've had the experience, and it shows. That was slick, the way you put down them poor losers. I thought we was going to have to shoot our way out of there.
Again, you're playing the odds. I've shot my way out of a few games, and that's doing it the hard way. The more often you rely on your guns, the greater the odds that you'll take one right between the eyes.
By God, you're a good influence. I reckon I played too much poker with Ben Thompson. That little varmint's got a hair-trigger temper. Say the wrong thing to him, he's got just one answer, and that's with his gun.
He's bucking the odds. He'll likely cash in with his brains leaking out on a poker table.
Nathan and Fisher visited other saloons, buying into other poker games, then moving on. At midnight, Fisher emptied his pockets on a table.
I'm more than $200 ahead. You're bringing me luck.
Whether you win or lose at the table isn't nearly as important as staying alive. The odds are always in your favor when you use your brains instead of your gun.
San Antonio, Texas, January 24th, 1874. Saturday morning, King Fisher and Nathan had just sat down to breakfast in a cafe when a stranger approached their table.
Mr. Stone? You may not remember me, but I was with Captain Sage Jennings at Austin. My name's Bodie West. The captain always spoke highly of you, and I wondered if you knew of his death.
I do. I last saw him at Fort Worth. And when I telegraphed Captain Ferguson to inquire about him, Ferguson sent me the bad news. Take a chair and join us for breakfast. This is my amigo, King Fisher.
We suspected the Horrells had ambushed him, but by the time we got our orders to question them, they had quit the territory. Yesterday, I got word they've all come back. But their outlaw kin, Clint Barkley, wasn't with them. Nobody seen him.
Nobody will. I learned for certain he was the back-shooting sidewinder that ambushed Captain Jennings. I found him in New Mexico, and he'll stay there until Judgment Day. I promised Cap I'd find him and that he would pay.
We're obliged, and I say that on behalf of the state of Texas. The next time you're in Austin, I think we'll have something for you. Something from the captain. I better mosey along now.
Stone, last night I said you wasn't a born and bred Texan. I spoke out of turn. You're as much a Texan as any of us, and maybe more so than some. It takes a big man to avenge a friend. And if I cash in with a bullet in the back, then I hope somebody cares enough to go after the varmint that done it.
They returned to the cafe for supper that evening. As they left after finishing their meal, Nathan stepped through the door first. A slug ripped into the doorframe just inches from his head. The shot had come from a vacant store building across the street. Colt in his hand, Nathan headed for it in a zigzag run, King Fisher right behind him. On the other side of the vacant building, there was open space all the way to the alley, and Nathan took one side while Fisher took the other. The alley seemed deserted, and the back door to the building stood open, hanging forlornly on a single hinge.
Damn, he could have ducked into any one of a dozen places down this alley. You got any idea who the varmint was?
This is the last of the bunch that was riding me down when you saved my bacon.
He ain't got the sand to face you then. Do you know the varmint by sight?
Yes, and I don't aim to duck and dodge around while he stalks me. He's in this town somewhere, and I'm going after him.
By God, this is my kind of game. If you don't mind, I'll trail along, so as he don't plug you in the back.
He's that kind. Thanks. Come on.
They visited every hotel and rooming house Fisher could think of, but found none that had rented a room to Jubal Wells.
Maybe he's using another name.
Or maybe he hasn't taken a room anywhere. He could be just prowling the streets, keeping out of sight, waiting for another chance.
Then let's give him that chance. We'll go back to the Alamo Saloon, have a beer or two. Just inside the back door, there's a storeroom. We'll go in there just long enough for you to take my hat and coat, and for me to take yours. By then, it'll be dark enough for an hombre across the street to mistake me for you. You'll ease out the back door of the Alamo and around to the front, keeping in the shadow of the overhang. After giving you time to get into position, I will step out the front door. When this bastard cuts down on me, you blast him to hell and gone.
No, I appreciate what you're offering to do, but I won't have you swapping your life for mine. The lamp on each side of the door, how could he miss?
Yeah, we don't know that he'll fall for it, but I believe he will. There's nothing to get excited about when somebody fires a shot unless there's a dead body. And we shucked out from that cafe before anybody could call the law. Now, unless you got a better plan, let's use mine. There's some risk for me, but a lot more for you, until you gun down this slippery coyote.
Nathan entered the Alamo Saloon with Fisher right behind him. After one beer, they made as if to exit by the back door, but instead went into the storeroom. There they swapped hats and coats.
Just be damn sure you allow me enough time to get into position.
I aim to. I won't deny you the pleasure of salting down this coyote if possible, but keep one thing in mind. If someone throwing lead at me, it's plumb against my religion not to shoot back.
I'm not selfish. You're taking all the risk. If you can nail him before I do, then be my guest.
Nathan slipped out the back door of the saloon. Keeping well within the shadow of the roof's overhang, he made his way along the building's outside wall toward the front. He reached his position, feeling certain he hadn't been seen. His Colt ready, Nathan peeked around the corner, his eyes on the front entrance. King Fisher stepped out and, seeming to drop something, bent over. At that very instant, two slugs slammed into the wall. Nathan fired at the muzzle flashes. King dropped to his knees and returned fire. It was over as suddenly as it had begun, and men boiled out of the Alamo Saloon. The sheriff, Owen Perryman, came on the run, and the first man he saw was King Fisher.
Oh, damn it. I might have known. With all this shooting going on, you'd somehow be in the middle of it. You got some explaining to do, Fisher.
Maybe I'd better explain it, Sheriff. I've had a bushwhacker stalking me, and King just stepped out of the saloon wearing my hat and coat. He drew fire from the other side of the street. And if you're needing somebody to blame for all this, have a look over there.
The sheriff lit his lantern and headed across the street, followed by most of the crowd from the saloon. He returned almost immediately.
Damn it, hold it down! He's dead as he'll ever be, with a pistol in his hand. From what I can see, there'll be no charges if you're claiming self-defense.
That's exactly what I'm claiming. He'd already had one shot at me today, and my friend Fisher joined me in setting a trap for him.
By God, you done a prime job. That hombre was drilled through his middle 3 times.
Nathan and Fisher got away before anybody got around to questioning them, taking a roundabout way through the back entrance of the Cattleman's Hotel just down the street.
It's been a while since I've had any excitement. You saw how it was. I killed some skunk that's trying to kill me, and law's there, Johnny on the spot, ready to plant me in a juzgado. By God, if it gets any more civilized around here, I'll have to move the Pendencia Ranch to the Mex side of the river.
Yeah, I reckon this has ruined our Saturday night. We won't be able to go anywhere in town without having to answer questions I'd just as soon leave unanswered.
Yeah, no matter. When I get shot at and live to talk about it and ride out sober with 200 in poker winnings, I consider it a good night. And I reckon it's time to go. There'll be other nights, other poker games, and we never even got to the women.
When May came, King made good on his promise to take Nathan on a wild horse hunt. Nathan and Fisher reined up at a little adobe hut just across the Rio Grande. A man stepped out of a nearby log barn. His enormous sombrero shaded his face. His shirt and trousers were of rough homespun, while his chaqueta and chapareras were of leather. King Fisher nodded to Nathan, and they dismounted.
Hola, mi amigo.
Buenos dias, señor.
Nathan, this is Pancho Gomez. Pancho, this is my amigo, Nathan Stone. He'll accompany us in the hunt for caballos.
Si, bienvenido.
Nathan and Fisher followed Pancho into the adobe hut, and he led them to the small kitchen, where there was a crude wooden table with a bench on either side. A Mexican woman nodded to them.
Nathan, this is Maria.
Following Pancho's lead, Nathan and Fisher took their seats at the table, while Maria brought each of them a heavy earthen mug.
Doloroso, no coffee.
There's pulque and goat's milk. I recommend the goat's milk. I reckon the pulque is about 140 proof.
I'll pass on both.
Here's the rest of the riders. Come on, I'll introduce you.
They swept off their sombreros as King Fisher introduced them to Nathan.
This is Juan Corona. He thinks like a wild horse. And the critter next to him is Hidalgo Allende. And he eats like one. Then there's Pedro Calzada and Jardín Panduro. They drink pulque instead of water and manage to stay alive. God only knows how.
The Mexicans looked approvingly upon the 2 loaded pack horses Fisher had brought, and Nathan began to appreciate the Texan's relationship with his neighbors across the river.
Oh, almost forgot something.
Going to his horse, he removed a cloth sack from his saddlebag.
Coffee beans, Maria.
Oh, gracias.
They mounted and rode south, Pancho leading the way. As they rode deeper into the country, there was a series of breaks, rough terrain, shot full of washes and gullies. On exposed ridgetops and dry slopes, there was no sign of life except occasional clumps of bristlecone pine. There was some choya and prickly pear cactus. Finally, they rode for more than a mile across a barren alkali plain.
I don't see how anything can live in this country. No graze.
There's grazing water in the mountains and in the foothills surrounding them. That's where we're going. We won't get much done today, except setting up camp.
Pancho Gomez knew exactly where he was going, and 3 hours before sundown, he led them to a cienega, a cool hollow overhung with willows. At the base of the slope was a spring with a runoff, fed by a never-ending fall of water from a rock crevice above.
Good water. In this land, when you find a good spring, you stay with it, even if you have to ride 50 miles a day's end getting back to it.
It was a good camp, and the Mexican riders proved amiable companions. The next day, the Mexicans made a breakfast of coffee and beans.
It'll be a long day. There's 2 or 3 canyons we can use, any of them a good 2-hour ride from here. How handy are you with a double-bitted axe?
I can use it when I have to, but I've never had much of a liking for it.
Neither has any of us, but it purely has a place when you're building a catch pan. I brought 3 of the critters so we can take turns. When we're done with you, Stone, you'll be an honest-to-God wrangler. A cazador de caballada.
When they broke camp, nothing was left behind. Despite the friendliness of the Mexican riders, they were still in hostile territory.
Sometimes catching horses is the easy part. There are bands of thieves who will steal a horse from under you if you hold still. As any of my amigos can tell you, one of their favorite tricks is to wait until the catch has been made and the horse is gentle. Then they'll steal the herd, drive the horses across the border, and sell them.
That sounds like the Comancheros that used to steal cattle from Goodnight and other trail drivers, selling the cows to the military.
Good comparison. There's always a flock of thieving buzzards ready to swoop down and take what better men have paid for with sweat and calloused hands.
Not this time.
The canyon seemed ideal, for there was a spring midway with a substantial runoff.
More work for us, because we'll have to block both ends, but good water will bring us the herds.
This may sound like a greenhorn question, but how can you barricade both ends of the canyon without scaring the horses away? Hell, there ain't a horse alive that don't recognize a fence.
That's a damn good question. I don't know what's the best way, but I can tell you how we do it. Wild horse herds always come to water at night or at dawn, so our work has to be done in between waterings, and the surroundings can't change drastically enough for the wild ones to notice. Contrary to what some folks think, a wise old mare is usually leading the herd, while the stallion brings up the rear. We can't close either end of the canyon more than maybe a third or less, and we do that gradually, over 3 or 4 days. Across the part we leave open, we dig post holes, carefully removing the dirt and concealing the holes with dead leaves or grass. Fence rails are made ready. When the herd is in the canyon, riders at both ends will get the posts in place and then rawhide the rails into position, 4 high.
Sounds simple enough. The horses never challenge the fence?
Not often. That stallion I was telling you about jumped the fence once and we added a 4th rail. We ain't been able to catch him again.
No rain. Many caballos come here.
That being the case, we may have a chance at the big black.
You have to gentle the horses enough so they can be driven. How long does that take?
It mostly depends on how many we catch. Could take as long as 2 weeks.
Nathan remembered the days in New Orleans when Yuli Prater had gone into a corral with an unruly black horse and had made friends with the animal just by talking to it. The sun was an hour high before Kingfisher was ready to begin work on the fence.
We'll use dead wood for a third of the fence at each end. Horses are smart enough to know something's not right if they can smell the sap of newly cut trees and limbs. A couple of windblown trees snaked into position is a good start.
At the end of the first day, one entrance to the canyon was 1/3 blocked with a barricade of dead logs and brush higher than a man's head. Nathan had to admit it didn't look unnatural enough to frighten a horse.
We'll wait another day or two to dig the post holes for the rest of the fence, giving them a chance to become used to the brush and log pile. Tomorrow, we'll go to the other end of the canyon and barricade part of the entrance. Then we'll only have to dig the post holes, cut the posts and the rails.
The building of the second barricade raised as much sweat and as many blisters as the first, and when it was finished, they set about cutting the necessary posts and rails. The heavy posts were 10 feet long, and starting 3 feet from the bottom, were notched 4 times, 2 feet apart, where the rails would be secured with rawhide. There would be 3 posts and 8 10-foot-long rails required to close each end of the canyon. By noon of the 3rd day, the posts and rails were ready.
Now comes the hard part. And I only brought 1 post hole digger, so we'll take turns. Hot as it is, we'll all do a little digging, so it won't be so hard on any of us. I'll go first.
After breaking through a crust of caliche, there was hard clay. And before the first post hole was deep enough, every man was sweating. Dirt removed from the hole was put on a 4-foot square of canvas and taken away, lest the incoming herd be suspicious.
Now, we'll cover all the ground around and near the holes with dead leaves. We want the ground to look as natural as we can make it. We'll be right here until we're ready to drive the herd across the river.
We can't go into the canyon. What about water?
The water that forms the spring in the canyon originates on the rim. We'll water our mounts and get water for our own use up there. We must stay away from the spring where the wild ones go. There'll be a full moon tonight, and I think we'll just observe the ones who come to water, giving them a chance to overcome any suspicions they may have.
Shortly after moonrise, they took a position on the canyon rim from which they could see the spring and both their brush barricades. The moon rose higher, a silver globe that mantled the rugged, broken land with a spectral glow. They waited for what seemed hours, shifting their positions occasionally to rest tired, cramped muscles. The first sound of their coming was so slight it might have existed only in imagination. But no, there it was again. Then, appearing silver in the moonlight, they could see the trail-wise old white mare nearing the partially brush-barricaded canyon mouth. For a long moment, she stood there, keening down the canyon breeze like a wolf. Finally, she called to the waiting herd. And then the others came. There were sorrels, bays, duns, chestnuts, browns, blacks, grays, and grullas. A solid black stallion brought up the rear, nipping at the flanks of the stragglers. The watching men hardly dared breathe as the horses, 30 or more, made their way to the water. The majestic stallion remained where he was, lifting his head toward the canyon rims, seeming to sense the presence of danger. Not until the rest of the herd had drunk their fill did he approach the water, and even as he drank, he raised his head occasionally, listening. The white mare started back the way she had come, most of the herd following. The few that lingered received a painful nip from the stallion. Finally, the herd was gone.
My God. Did you ever see the like?
He reminds me of a black I once knew. He ran like the wind, and in a quarter-mile run could outrun anything on 4 feet. I'd bet all I ever hoped to own that this big black could do as well or better.
Damn it, I gotta have him. If I could take him to the races at San Antone on July 4th, I could bust every tin-horn gambler in South Texas.
Diablo! Caballo de muerte!
Maybe, but I don't believe there's a horse alive that can't be gentled if it's done right and you take enough time.
You may not have that much time unless you aim to spend the rest of the summer here in this canyon. It'll be a hell of a ride back to your place if you're fighting that big black on a lead rope all the way.
No Diablo Caballo, no mucho pesos.
You only have to catch the horse. You don't have to gentle him. If we catch this Diablo Caballo, will our trap hold him?
Perhaps.
Then let's get him. I want to see what our Texas amigo can do with him if it does take all summer.
The following day, time dragged. Kingfisher seemed preoccupied, and Nathan suspected he had the elusive black stallion on his mind. Even if they could catch him, suppose he proved impossible to tame? They had supper well before dark, doused the fire, and picketed their horses in a canyon a good distance away from the canyon where the wild horses came to drink.
Nathan, you'll stay with Juan Corona, Hidalgo Allende, and me at the upper end of the canyon. Pancho, you'll take Pedro and Hardeen and cover the lower end. With any luck, the herd won't show until after moonrise. Wait until they begin to drink before you make your move. Get those posts in place pronto. Once they've discovered we got both ends of the canyon covered, there'll be some confusion, and that's all the advantage we have. We'll have just a matter of seconds to place the posts and secure the rails.
At dusk, they all took their assigned places, far enough back in the brush that there was no chance of discovery. Then they could only wait for the arrival of the herd. The full moon rose, bathing the rugged landscape in silver, and still they waited. The moon had already begun its descent when there was a sound near the mouth of the canyon. Then, seeming almost ghostly, they could see the wise old white mare picking her way down the canyon. Reaching the partial barrier they had erected, she paused for what seemed an eternity. Would she enter? Finally she did, calling to the horses. Behind her came the herd, followed by the black stallion, ever wary. Fisher didn't move until the mare had reached the spring and the stallion was well past the place where the fence would be raised.
Come on, let's get those posts in position.
Fisher and each of the two Mexican riders seized a post, and then misfortune struck. A rock rolled under Fisher's boot and he fell, dropping the heavy post. Nathan took up the post and drove it into one of the prepared holes. Fisher came on the run with one of the rails. Nathan took one end and they rawhided it to two of the posts in the top position. Juan Corona and Hidalgo Allende quickly secured another rail, while Nathan and Fisher ran back for a third. They had all but two rails lashed in place when they heard the stallion nicker again as the herd started back down canyon.
By God, we got them all!
The black stallion galloped up to the fence and reared on his hind legs as though to crush the barrier. He then turned and raced to the other end of the canyon.
If there's a way out, he'll find it.
Then he better find it before daylight. That's when him and me will start getting acquainted. You gotta show a horse you're not afraid of him.
When daylight came, Fisher started getting to know the horse. He crawled through the fence, and the black stallion came after him, teeth bared. Fisher hit the ground and rolled under the fence, but the stallion caught the back of his shirt with those mighty teeth. The fabric ripped, allowing Fisher to escape, minus most of his shirt. His hat was on the other side of the fence, and he watched the black stallion pulverize it with those lethal hooves. Pancho Gomez shook his head.
He'll never be your compañero, señor. You kill him or he kill you, I think.
I don't care a damn what you think. Find another canyon and herd the rest of these broomtails into it. Leave this black devil where he is. By God, I can hold out as long as he can.
The rest of those horses are as wild as the stallion. How do you aim to drive them anywhere?
The white mare, senor. She has not always been wild, for she wears a brand. Perhaps she not forget.
To Nathan's surprise, the Mexican riders managed to find a box canyon with water and graze. They built a fence so that the rails could be removed. Pancho then began to work with the white mare, and 5 days later, the wild horses, with the exception of the stallion, were driven to the new holding pen. While the Mexican riders began working with the wild horses, King Fisher was alone with his challenge. The big black hadn't been still since his capture. He stalked from one end of his canyon prison to the other, seeking a way out. The stallion was at the far end of the canyon, but when Fisher climbed over the fence, the horse came after him at a fast gallop. Fisher stood his ground, determined to defy the horse, and almost too late he stepped aside. The stallion wheeled and came after him again, teeth bared. Fisher lost his nerve, but this time he didn't make it under the fence. The black stallion sunk his teeth into Fisher's backside. Nathan drew his Colt. He fired over the horse's head. Only then did he let go of Fisher, allowing him to get under the fence. Fisher lay belly down. Finally, he got to his hands and knees. Nathan managed not to laugh.
Looks like, by God, I'll have to get a saddle on the bastard and ride him down.
That's no way to tame a horse. The best you'd ever have is a horse that hates your guts.
Then what would you do with him?
I'd take down that fence and set him free.
Never in hell.
One way or the other, you're going to lose him. Look.
The stallion was trying to climb the canyon wall. He had dug in his hooves, inching his way painfully along, only to lose his footing and fall to the canyon floor. Undaunted, he struggled to his feet, blood glistening on his rump. Three more times, the horse tried to creep up the impossibly steep wall, and three times he fell. It was more than Nathan Stone could stand. With his knife, he slashed the rawhide, and the barrier was down.
Damn it, that's my horse!
No, he's not your horse, and he never will be. He'll go free or he'll die. Now, you and me are going to get our horses and ride away from here. You have the horses you came for, if you can keep this devil horse from taking them away from you.
They rode out, bound for the canyon where the Mexican cowboys held the rest of the captured horses. Cotton Blossom loped ahead.
Diablo Caballo?
I turned him loose. Now we got to get the rest of these broomtails out of here before he comes looking for them.
That horse bite needs some attention. It could become infected.
They not, a nothing but a bruise. I'll have Milagro see to it when we get back to the ranch.
Caballos ready.
King Fisher nodded, and the drive began. There were 28, including the mare with the brand, and to Nathan they looked as unruly as ever. But the Mexican riders had worked wonders with the white mare, and she took the trail readily. The others followed and were kept bunched.
We'll make camp near the first spring.
It was the spring where they had camped that first night after entering Mexico. And after a day under the relentless sun, even the wild horses forgot everything except the cool water at hand. After resting the horses, they ate a beef jerky supper as they rode, constantly circling the captured horses.
If that stallion shows up, shoot the varmint. Don't wait till he's scattered the herd to hell and gone.
The rest of you stay close to the herd. Cotton Blossom and me will be a half mile out, riding a circle. If the stallion shows up, we'll try to spook him before he can reach the herd.
Nathan received grateful looks from the Mexican riders. They clearly didn't want to kill the stallion just to save King Fisher's captured herd, and Nathan shared their sentiment. It would be a long and tiring night, but another day of hard riding would take them to the Rio Grande. Nathan was weary of the mercenary aspects of wild horse hunting. Sometime after midnight, Nathan reined up. Something was wrong. Nathan kicked his horse into a gallop. Cotton Blossom hadn't liked the wild stallion, and Nathan suspected that if the two met, the hound would make a fuss similar to what he was now hearing. It was the nature of a wolf, or a dog, to hamstring a horse, elk, or deer. And if that happened, the animal so afflicted had to be shot.
Cotton Blossom! Here!
Nathan was relieved that the stallion was still able to walk. Eventually, a shadow separated itself from the brush. Cotton Blossom had arrived, but so had King Fisher, with his Winchester ready.
Damn it, while the dog had his attention, why didn't you shoot the varmint?
No, I didn't see the need for it. I reckon Cotton Blossom chewed on him some, and he backed off. Let's leave well enough alone.
The rest of the night was uninterrupted, and they moved out at first light, chewing on jerked beef as they rode. Nathan looked back occasionally, half expecting to see a thin bloom of dust on their back trail.
That sneaking varmint trails us. I'll meet him with a Winchester.
Nathan could only hope the stallion had given up and wouldn't follow. It was near sundown when they reached the Rio Grande, and there they reined up, for the Mexican riders didn't wish to cross the river. Kingfisher paid them in gold and allowed them to take some of the remaining supplies from the pack horse.
Now it'll be up to the two of us to get these broomtails across the river and into the corral.
It was no easy task, for the horses were still wild enough to balk at the very sight of a corral. Fisher finally managed to lead the white mare in, and the others very reluctantly followed. When the rails were in place, Fisher sagged against the fence.
My God, of all the horse hunts we ever done, this was the worst. I'm tempted to give up on horses and take to sticking up banks if I wasn't such a big target.
You'd have to get shot pretty low down to equal the pain from this horse hunt. I'd say you bottomed out.
You won't ever let me forget that, will you?
Probably not, but at least I didn't tell your Mexicano riders.
They went on to the house and found Milagros had supper ready. It was the first decent meal they'd had since leaving the ranch. The Mexican cook fed Cotton Blossom in the kitchen, after which the hound curled up behind the stove.
We'd better stand watch near the corral tonight. I wouldn't be in the least surprised if that stallion don't come after his mares.
He can try. It's a 5-rail fence, double lash with green rawhide. A bull buffalo couldn't break it down. I'm ready for a decent night's sleep.
I can put Cotton Blossom outside.
Hell, he's been without sleep as long as we have. Leave him be.
The first rays of the rising sun were just painting the eastern sky when Nathan got up, dressed, and made his way to the kitchen. Milagros had the coffee ready, and she poured Nathan a cup. Cotton Blossom still drowsed behind the stove and opened one eye for Nathan's benefit. Nathan went to the kitchen window from which he could see the barn and the distant corral. Unbelieving, he rubbed his eyes and looked again. The corral was empty.
God almighty, I don't believe it.
Don't believe what?
The corral's empty.
Kingfisher sprang to the door in his sock feet. He paused on the porch, his eyes on the empty corral. He finally sat down on the steps, buried his face in his hands. Nathan thought he was gonna cry.
God damn! Horses are the dang cussedest beast! I wish Noah's Flood had taken them all. I'll be damned for a tin-horn sidewinder if I don't give up driving horses and take to bank robbing for a living. That cussed stallion's put the fix on me.
Come on, we might as well go and see how he did it.
Choosing one of the posts where the 5 fence rails had been double-lashed in place, the resourceful stallion had chewed through the iron-tough rawhide. As a result, the rails had fallen free, leaving a sufficient gap for the horses to escape.
Damn him, I should have shot the sneaking varmint when I had him behind a fence.
No, you shouldn't be relying on rawhide for a permanent corral fence. You made it easy for him. What do you aim to do now?
I'm riding to town for some nails. Spikes, maybe. Then I'll rebuild this damn corral 6 rails high. Then I'm going on another horse hunt. And if that black varmint knows what's good for him, he'll stay shy of rifle range.
I think I'll pass on the next hunt. It's about time I was riding on.
Ah, hell, I won't be going until the middle of July. I'm considerably bent, but I ain't broke. Stick around for the horse races on July 4th. With your luck, I'd like to just lay my bets alongside yours. What's the most you ever won on a horse?
10,000. But I had to shoot my way out of town.
By God, I wish I'd been with you. That kind of money's worth fighting for. If I had your luck, I wouldn't lift nothing heavier than a deck of cards.
There are times when I wish I'd never seen a deck of cards. Take a man's money, even in an honest game, and you may have to shoot him to keep it. How many men do you kill before they begin to haunt you?
I can't figure you. You got the golden touch with the pistol and with the cards, yet it bothers you to shoot them that's needful of it, and I get the feeling you don't really like to gamble.
Some questions are best left unanswered. I reckon I'll stay for the race on July 4th. Maybe we'll both get lucky.
Uvalde, Texas, July 4th, 1874. Uvalde, only a fraction of the size of nearby San Antonio, outdid itself in preparation for the 4th of July festivities. It seemed as though all of San Antonio had turned out for the celebration. Several tons of beef and pork was being barbecued in pits, and 2 wagon loads of watermelons were on hand. There was a coop full of roosters for a Carrera del Gallo.
I've never seen the like for so small a town.
You ain't seen nothing yet. Every saloon, hotel, cafe, livery, even the whorehouses throws money into the pot toward first, second, and third place winners of the horse race. First prize has been as much as $1,000. The fourth being on Saturday, the town will be roaring all night tonight, all day tomorrow, and maybe most of tomorrow night. There'll be some high-stakes poker games, too.
Cotton Blossom normally shied away from crowds, but the aroma of roasting meat was tempting, and he followed his nose to the source. Nathan and King Fisher went to one of the saloons where bets were being taken on the Saturday afternoon horse race. There were 15 horses entered.
I don't like to bet on anybody's horse until I've seen it.
I do. They'll generally be one as good as the other, or they wouldn't be in the race. It's the long shot that pays.
Let's see what's running. Jumping Bean. Dead last on the list, and that's likely how he'll finish.
Maybe not. With a name like that, he sounds like a cow horse. Look at those odds, 20-1.
Yeah, and there's likely a reason.
Partner, I'm laying 100 on Jumpin' Bean at 20-1.
It's your money. No payoff on second or third place.
I'm aware of that. Make it 200.
Place me a bet just like
it. You could be a mite early with that. My horses don't always win.
Yeah, but when they win, they do it big. With those odds, a win would put $4,000 in my pocket. I could lay off horse hunting for another year.
Come on, Cotton Blossom, we'll all get something to eat.
The race didn't begin until 2 o'clock, so they spent the time at the barbecue pit.
Hey, a dog!
While Cotton Blossom didn't readily take to strangers, he was willing to make exceptions when they offered him food.
Here, boy.
Many of the diners were very young and delighted in feeding the dog.
After the horse race, there'll be some serious poker games at the saloons.
We may not be able to afford them if Jumpin' Bean lives up to what everybody seems to expect.
Riders, on your mark!
The horses were brought to the starting line. Jumpin' Bean was a bay, maybe 14 hands, and even King Fisher was impressed.
He was right about one thing. He's a cow horse, born and bred. Stocky, deep-muscled, and sturdy leg. I like that deep chest, low withers, and powerful hindquarters. He got a thick neck while his head's broad and short. He'll hold his own in a quarter-mile run.
Suddenly, there was a commotion from the barbecue area. Duro Ellison stood with his hand on the butt of his colt while Cotton Blossom inched closer.
Cotton Blossom, no!
Cotton Blossom ceased growling, but that wasn't enough for Duro. He forgot his colt and turned on Nathan.
Stone, your damn dog near took my leg off. What do you aim to do about it?
Nothing, unless he attacked you without cause, did he?
Yes.
No!
Shut up! You gonna believe a kid over me?
Maybe. Did you see what happened?
He kicked the dog. It wasn't bothering him.
In that case, if the dog comes to any harm, Ellison, you'll answer to me. Comprende?
Duro Ellison slunk away.
Some free advice, amigo? Don't go turning your back on Duro Ellison. He's a bad apple, and his brothers, Pascal and Haynes, ain't no better. Any one of them would kill a dog, and likely anything else, just to see it die.
Thanks. I'll keep that in mind.
Riders, on your mark! Set!
There was some confusion at the start of the race. Accidentally, or intentionally, the horse in ninth position broke to the left, colliding with horses 7 and 8. As some of the other entries paused, Jumpin' Bean surged ahead. The rider, Mexican or Indian, was only a boy, and he rode without a saddle. The other riders spurred and quirted their horses, trying to box in Jumpin' Bean, but the sturdy little bay was too quick for them. His rider gave him his head, using neither spurs nor quirt, and the horse quickly took the lead. First by a head, then by a length, then 2 lengths. Clearly a winner, he crossed the finish line to the cheers of a few and the anguished groans of many.
Ha ha! By God, you know how to pick 'em. Let's go collect our winnings.
Reaching the saloon, Nathan and Fisher were greeted by good-natured shouts of congratulations. But some of the heavy losers were contesting the victory of Jumpin' Bean, and one of them was Duro Ellison.
Something went wrong at the start of that race, and I say it's got to be run again. Are we going to let some Mex kid and his nag just ride away with $1,000 of our money?
King Fisher stood with his back to the wall, a colt in each hand.
Mexican, Indian, or Chinese, the kid won the race fair and square. He earned the money, and I aim to see that he gets it.
You and who else?
Me, Ellison.
The judges are sticking to their decision. The winner had nothing to do with the fracas at the start of the race. If there's anybody of a mind to make trouble, I'll call in Sheriff Ward.
I'm already here. The race is over and the decision of the judges is final. If there's trouble, them that's the cause of it gets 30 days, free room and board in the Who's Gatto. Now break it up!
The protesters left the saloon. Duro Ellison cast a murderous look at Nathan and Fisher.
Come on. There's one hell of a poker game going on over there. We got a stake, and with your luck, maybe we can double it.
Or lose it.
They sat in on a game, only to be interrupted an hour later by Sheriff Ward.
Stone, you'd better come along. Your dog's near dead.
Nathan shot to his feet, and King Fisher started to follow.
No, King. I'll go alone.
Sheriff Ward led Nathan to a big poplar tree near the area where the barbecue pits were. Beneath the tree lay Cotton Blossom, and at a distance, people had gathered. Nathan saw none of them. Cotton Blossom's lean body was racked with convulsions.
Some varmint poisoned him. Coyote poison, I reckon.
Nathan knelt beside the stricken dog, and Sheriff Ward left them there. His eyes glazed with pain and the knowledge of approaching death, Cotton Blossom tried to drag himself closer to Nathan, but his hindquarters seemed paralyzed. Nathan stroked the dog's head for a moment, and Cotton Blossom closed his eyes. They didn't open again. As his breathing stopped, tears blinded Nathan's eyes. When he finally got to his feet, a sympathetic woman brought him a blanket. He nodded his thanks and spread it over Cotton Blossom. He then turned and walked toward the crowd that had gathered, his pale blue eyes cold.
I want the two-legged snake that poisoned my dog.
Duro Ellison was among the crowd, and he met Nathan's hard eyes with no expression in his own.
I reckon nobody's seen what happened. There's nothing we can do.
There's something I can do. I aim to find out who's responsible, and that skunk, male or female, is going to die. Slow. Now, somebody fed him poisoned meat, and some of you saw it. Who was the last to feed him?
Mister, I seen who did it. It was the mouth.
His mother clapped a hand over his mouth, but he broke away.
It was him!
The boy had pointed directly at Duro Ellison.
Stone, I won't have no shooting over a dog, yours or anybody else's.
Sheriff, I'm going to beat him with my bare hands. There'll be no gunplay unless somebody tries to stop me. Now all of you back off!
King Fisher had joined the crowd and had taken a position near Duro's brothers, Pascal and Haynes, who were armed but had said or done nothing. Of the same mind as King Fisher, Sheriff Ward moved nearer to Pascal and Haynes. He had known the Ellisons all his life, and nobody fought one without fighting all three.
Fist, then! I'll plug the first hombre that pulls a gun.
Duro rushed Nathan. He stepped aside and tripped him. He went belly down. Duro got to his hands and knees and then to his feet, wiping dirt from his ruddy face on the sleeve of his shirt. He went after Nathan again, seeking a bear hug. This time, Nathan didn't step aside. Bringing a right up from his knees, he missed Duro's chin and smashed his nose. Duro didn't go down, but he tottered, shaking his head like a wounded bull. Wary, he came after Nathan again, but changed his tactic. Nathan again stepped aside, but anticipating the move, Duro threw himself sideways, and the two of them went down in a tangle, Duro on top.
Bust his head, Duro!
Duro was astraddle Nathan, and he slammed Nathan's head against the hard ground. Nathan could feel the gravel cutting into the back of his head, and Duro's big hands around his throat cutting off his wind. But Duro Ellison had one thing working against him. Nathan Stone was in a killing mood, and his fury lent him the strength he needed. With a mighty heave, he bucked Ellison off and reversed their positions. Nathan slammed Duro's head unmercifully against the ground, all the while choking the life out of him. Nathan saw nothing but the lean, tortured body of Cotton Blossom during the final minutes of his life.
That's enough, Stone! That's enough!
Slowly, Nathan's eyes cleared as the fury subsided. Three men dragged him off of the lifeless body of Duro Ellison. Pascal and Haynes Ellison reached for their pistols. Sheriff Ward covered them with his Colt.
Hold it, boys. I ain't saying the finish was what we expected, but it was a fair fight.
Stone didn't do nothing to Duro that Duro didn't do to him. Does any of you dispute that?
By God, we dispute that. You can't hide behind the law forever, Stone. You're a dead man.
Whenever you're ready.
That's enough. You Ellisons take Duro and do with him what you will. And then I want you out of town. Move, damn it!
They removed the dead Duro, casting murderous looks at Nathan.
Sheriff, I need the loan of a spade.
I got one in the wagon. I'll get it for you.
Nathan went to the old poplar where the blanket-wrapped cotton blossom lay. People watched him in sympathy as he dug a grave. Finished, he tucked the blanket around the cold, stiffening body and laid it to rest. He filled the grave, mounding the dirt. Nathan gave the spade back to Sheriff Ward.
Muchas gracias, amigo.
Come on, Nathan. Let's ride to the ranch.
It's well past time I was riding on, King. I'm obliged for your hospitality, and I'll see you when I ride this way again. Adios.
He turned away, and Kingfisher knew better than to follow. Nathan went to the livery, paid his bill, saddled the Gruya, loaded the pack horse, and rode north. But for the time Cotton Blossom had been shot and laid up in Colorado, the hound had been with Nathan for 8 years, since that long-ago day in Virginia, when he had headed west in search of the renegades who had murdered his family. Now he rode alone, his sorrow all but blinding him to the danger that lay ahead. A covey of birds swooped down toward a thicket and just as quickly flew away. He reined up and dismounted, still out of gun range.
You in the thicket. You have one chance to come out and stand on your hind legs like men, or I'm coming after you with a Winchester.
Come on then, damn you! The Ellisons are ready!
Taking his Winchester from the boot, Nathan circled around behind the stand of scrub oak where it was less dense. There he bellied down, the Winchester in the crook of his arms, and began a slow advance. Nathan counted on the rattle of dry oak leaves to make enough noise to draw fire. He didn't know where the Ellisons were. His danger was great, and his first shot must count, for when he returned fire, he became a prime target for the second gunman. When the first shot came, it burned a fiery path across his left arm above the elbow. The second clipped an oak limb just above his head. To his relief, the shots had come from ahead of him, and he returned the fire.
Pascal, I'm hit!
It was enough to rattle Pascal, and in his haste, his accuracy suffered. Nathan fired twice. There were no more shots, but he waited, lest one or both were playing possum, waiting for him to try and advance. Growing impatient, he got to his knees, and drawing no fire, stood up. The Ellisons had died with their guns in their hands, each of them having been hit once.
Good luck with the buzzards and coyotes.
Mounting the Gruya, he took the lead rope of the pack horse and rode north. How many times had he avoided the towns, depending on Cotton Blossom to warn him of danger approaching their lonely camp? Now he was alone. How many times had he awakened to find Cotton Blossom beside him on some lonely trail or lying beside the bed? Briefly, he considered returning to El Paso, but changed his mind. He had gunned down the son of the town's richest man, and that would take some time to blow over, if it ever did. The words of the ranger Bodie West came back to him now.
We're obliged, and I say that on behalf of the state of Texas. The next time you're in Austin, I think we'll have something for you. Something from the captain.
With those words in mind, he set out for Austin.